This is Cincinnati Edition. I'm Jay Hanselman. Howard Wilkinson is off today. The Ohio-Kentucky-Indiana Regional Council of Governments was formed in 1964. It spent 50 years developing collaborative strategies to improve the quality of life and the economic vitality of our region. With final authority over all federal dollars spent on transportation in the region, OKI approves roughly $40 million each year in funding for projects in Ohio, Kentucky, and Indiana. Executive Director Mark Polosinski joins me to discuss OKI and its latest plans and projects. You can join our conversation. The phone number is 513-419-7100 or email talk@wvxu.org. We're also on Facebook and Twitter. Coming up later, I'll be speaking with Hamilton County Coroner Dr. Lakshmi Sammarco about the county's crime lab. But first, we're going to talk about OKI. Thanks for being here.
Hey, Jay. Thanks for having me on Cincinnati Edition.
And this is a radio show, but I got to say, I love that he's got an ink pen that lights up, and I'd like to have that pen.
Well, all depends, on, all depends how the interview goes. It's if you're tough on me, no pen.
But you said you got that at a conference.
Never mind. It's free to me, but not to you.
So let's start off. Just define OKI. What is the organization?
OKI is actually set up by the federal government back in 1964 by statute. And the reason that it was set up, it was for the federal government to find ways to get money into regions without going through states, to allow regions to have more say in how federal money would be spent on their streets and in their localities. So they established what were called metropolitan planning organizations, and OKI is a metropolitan planning organization. And what that means is, as you said in your introduction, any project in the region that has one penny of federal money in it, whether it be a bike path or a pedestrian path all the way to the Brent Spence Bridge, has to have OKI's approval. We work very collaboratively with 196 political jurisdictions that are in the region, such that we operate by consensus. And it's very important that people understand that this is not an adversarial relationship. So OKI over the years has been able to establish these relationships as a way to spend the money most efficiently.
And let's talk about your makeup. Most people have a board of directors, maybe 12, 20 people. You have a rather large board and then a smaller subsection of that, an executive board.
Yeah. When I was a CEO in the private sector, I had a board of nine I had difficulty getting along with, and I had one of those nine votes. But we have 117 people on our board, and they represent all the county governments. They obviously represent cities, townships. We have departments of transportation, transit agencies represented on them. That's our full board. And then we have an executive committee of 40, which is made up of members from the board. They meet when the board doesn't. We meet almost every month, and we do our work.
And the full board, you said, meets about four times a year.
They meet four times a year, and then the executive committee meets seven times a year.
And this comprises three states and eight different counties.
Three states, eight counties, 196 political jurisdictions.
And the counties actually increased. Was that several years ago when the metro area was sort of redefined to include like the far eastern county, like Brown County?
We have not. We have had no discussions with Brown joining.
Oh, so they're not in yet.
No, and there are reasons for that. There are certain federal regulations that would govern who we can be in our organization. There are also, it's a very practical thing. So when we sit down with a county that wants to join OKI, we sit down and work out the numbers. How much money would you get by joining OKI? And how much money do you receive by not being in OKI? And it's funny, but if the numbers ever turn in our favor, we're all for them joining, and so are they.
And how long have you been with OKI?
10 years.
And what size staff are you? Besides, you have a large board that we know about. Well, what about your staff?
Well, we basically are working with about half of what we did when I got there. We have 31 people, and we are very efficient, and we're very good. Staff's the best in the world. We've been recognized for our work nationally, internationally. Our staff has been, every department has been recognized in one way or another for its excellence.
Probably the thing that you do lots of things, and we'll get into all of those, but probably I think the thing that most people see is the transportation component, especially highway construction. And one of those projects, I think the groundbreaking is coming up either later this month or in July for the new 71 MLK interchange that ODOT is doing with the City of Cincinnati and OKI's help. Define, that project needed some, I won't call it gap funding, but it needed some funding filled in, and OKI played a role in that that was sort of unique. Can you describe that?
Well, you know, Jay, just to start out, this project's been near and dear to OKI. Shortly after I got to OKI, we did the original planning study for the MLK interchange. And the reason it's always been a big item at OKI is because it is the perfect example of how transportation and economic development and community development are put together. This project unlocks Uptown. As anybody knows, if you're not in Uptown, you can't get there from here. If you're in Uptown, it's very difficult to get around. A lot of changes have taken place. But that interchange was very, very important to us so that it would not only allow businesses to unlock their potential, but also help people get to the hospitals, particularly in emergency situations. So we've had a long history with this, probably longer than anyone else in the region. And what it came down to is simply that the state and the city could not come up with the money. They were about $25 million short. We entered into a rather historic agreement with the Department of Transportation in Ohio and the city. We were asked to take out a $25 million loan. OKI, unfortunately, is fortunately, is not allowed to take on debt. So we couldn't take out the loan, but we suggested that the city take out the loan and that we'd pay back the principal, and the city would be responsible for the interest. This was a state infrastructure bank loan out of ODOT. So it really wasn't our idea as much as a collaboration of three groups, and it took some time to make sure that we understood all the ramifications. But at the end of the day, the project was ready to go, had tremendous political support, not only at the local level but at the state level. But we're just missing that piece, and we were happy to be part of the group that put that piece in place, because it is it's a dynamite project, needs to be done. It's always been, you know, one of the top four or five projects in OKI's mind.
The project itself has been sort of put on the fast track because construction originally wasn't supposed to start until what, maybe like 2016, 2017?
Well, without this funding agreement, there is no start to the project because you're always going to be $25 million short. And please explain to me, you know, where the city's going to get $25 million. In addition, every year you wait, the cost of the project goes up. So the project really, unless this was done, the project had no way of really getting moving.
The other big project facing our region involves the Brent Spence Bridge between Ohio and Kentucky.
Which one's the Brent Spence Bridge again?
We're laughing about that.
Is that the yellow one?
The big one, two deck, western side of the western side of the city. You know, the governor of Ohio was in Cincinnati yesterday to sign legislation that would allow electronic tolling on the Ohio side of the bridge. Kentucky lawmakers, especially Northern Kentucky lawmakers, are adamantly against tolling. Just as you can, as we talk here on June the 12th, 2014, where does that project stand?
Well, I think what the governor has done, and he really initiated this process when he first started his administration.
Governor Kasich.
I apologize, yeah. Is he came in and he established a Office of Innovative Financing, which allowed for public-private partnerships, which is a way, not the only way, but a way to drive down dramatically the cost of a project because it builds it sooner and therefore cheaper. He established that, as I say, within the first year of his administration. And now, as you look at the Brent Spence Bridge, that original innovative office allowed for tolling. It did not, in the original legislation, allow for electronic tolling. So that's what this piece does. It addresses other concerns. It hooks it up to the national grid, if you will, of electronic tolling. And it also protects privacy issues, which are very important to me. So what this is the final piece, if you will, from Ohio's side about when it comes to, you know, setting the table for, you know, the building of the bridge. So Ohio is ready to go. We just need a funding and a financing plan. And as you look around, the question is, where do you get the dough? And the federal government is $17 trillion in debt with an unfunded liability of $70 trillion. states, whether it be Kentucky or Ohio, this project is so big that all the money that they have for transportation in a particular year would have to be funneled here. So politically, there is no way that states are going to allow that to happen. So states don't have the funding. So everybody wants to turn to, you know, the source of funds. And in our world today, that's the private sector. It's been estimated that there's over $1 trillion of money in the private sector waiting to invest in infrastructure projects. How do you attract the private sector? One of the ways to do it, as a matter of fact, the most secure way, the way that you would actually drive down the cost of the bridge the most, is through tolling, because tolling is the most secure route to do that. So the table's set. Tolling probably is the option. Both governors have said that that is the option. Both legislators have said that. So what we have is a situation where the pregnant issue is what is going to happen in tolling in Kentucky. This past year, Kentucky did introduce a public-private partnership bill. They don't have public-private partnership. In Kentucky, carte blanche, you have to apply them by certain projects. This bill would allow public-private partnerships across a broad spectrum, not just transportation, of uses across the entire state. The bill passed both houses overwhelmingly. However, when it got to the House, there was attachment of an amendment that would not allow tolling for the Brent Spence Bridge. The governor of Kentucky vetoed that legislation. A very popular piece of legislation passing overwhelmingly both houses, the governor had the guts to stand up and say, I can't in good conscience pass this popular piece of legislation because it prohibits what is probably the most likely way to fund a bridge sooner and cheaper. So now where we are is next year, that legislature comes back into session and they will have the question of what do we do about public-private partnerships. And it will be interesting to see whether or not an anti-tolling provision will be added to such a bill. And if it is not, will it pass? We are basically 6 to 9 months away from an answer. And the answer is very clear. Either we do this now, or we're going to kick the can down the road another 10 years. And the reason for that is that Governor Beshear leaves. We're not sure about who's following him. Will he have the same dedications project that Beshear has? Kasich is up for re-election. There's talk about him running for president. So all the political stars that are aligned now could all go away, and they probably, to some degree, will, particularly if people look at this region and say, what the hell are you doing? It's been so long that we know we need this bridge. How do we get it done? And if we're not ready to pull the trigger, then I think that people will say we can find other uses for our money.
I mean, before we went on the air, you said that same thing, that you thought there would be a decision in the next year. It would be, you know, kicking the can down the road to the future. We had Trey Grayson on last week, who's going to be the head of the Northern Kentucky Chamber, and I asked him if the project is doomed. And if there isn't a decision next year, it sounds to me like the project is doomed.
The project's not doomed, because if we do kick this can down the road, congestion is going to continue to build. There will be more deaths because of the bridge. And when that happens, it's just a matter of time until the public again gets in front of the politicians and says this needs to be done.
And demands action. How? And I've heard the number, I don't remember it off the top of my head. Every month you wait, every year that you wait, how much does the cost of the project increase?
It's estimated every year you wait to build the project costs you $100 million more. So, you know, if you talk about it, we're talking about a bridge that's now $2.6 billion. If we can use a public-private partnership that gets a shovel in the ground in 2016, 2017, we're talking about driving down the cost of that project maybe by as much as $500, $600 million. So now you have a $2 billion bridge. If you wait 10 years, do the math, you're talking about a $4 billion project. So what do the taxpayers want? They want to spend $4 billion and wait 17 years to have it finished? Or do they want to spend $2 billion and have it finished in this decade?
We could talk about the Brent Spence all afternoon, but as you're looking out planning-wise, how far out into the future do you look? You know, 10 years, 20 years, 30 years when it comes to transportation and potential projects?
Well, we look out, we have a long-range plan that goes 2040, which we'll be updating shortly and take it to 2045. But we also have a short-range plan. It's called the Transportation Improvement Plan, and that looks out 3 years. And so what we do is every 3 years we look at those projects that we can start or finish in that time period. And it's kind of amazing, but OKI approves about $1 billion a year of projects. And the simple fact is that what's amazing about that is that we do it by consensus.
Are we, I mean, you see, obviously, traffic delays at rush hour. I mean, and I think people expect that. But sometimes I think, you know, when I'm on interstates in the morning, it's like, you know, in 5 and 10 years from now, are we going to be at, in some places, complete gridlock?
Well, if you're finding it now. People, what happens when you have congestions around peak hours, a.m. and p.m., what happens is not that that the people just decide to still follow their same paths or leave their houses at the same time or leave work at the same time. What they do is they start leaving earlier or they start leaving later. And so what you see is the rush hour starts to expand. I know when I moved to this area 20-some years ago, if I was on the road at 7:45, I could make it to downtown, not a problem. If I'm not on the road at 7:15 now, I'm probably going to run into delays. So, and the same thing occurs on the back end. So what happens when you have the situation is the rush hour keeps extending itself. But the point being is that congestion at the premier part of the peak doesn't get any less. It gets worse. So, you know, it's just a very, very tough thing to do to try to convince people that this congestion needs mitigation in a lot of ways. And one of those ways is to invest more in our roads as well as looking at other transit options.
Those other transit options, I guess it's been about 10 years ago, Hamilton County voters rejected a levy for Metro Moose, which would have introduced light rail. Mm-hmm. How much of an impediment is it to this region that there's not that rail option?
Well, I think you'd have to ask economic developers, and even though I'm an economist by training, I don't pretend to do the work that these really dedicated professionals do. But let's just look at it like this. Whether it be light rail or whether it be heavy rail, whether it be bus rapid transit, we have to do something that helps us with our congestion problems. The simple fact is if you look at the Brent Spence Bridge, just not to get back to that, but some idea what congestion means. If we don't have a replacement for the Brent Spence Bridge, it's not as though just a 71-75 corridor shuts down. The whole grid shuts down. 275, the entire loop of 275 shuts down. 471 shuts down. So what does that mean? Well, if you look out by 2025, okay, when you have that total gridlock, it means that if you land at CBG and you are, you know, the head of a company and you're looking to locate here and you want to go to the Central Business District, it's going to take you about 1 hour and 10 minutes to get to the Central Business District from CBG. Now, can you imagine we're trying to locate your company here and saying, you know, this is what I want to do. I want to have my executives and my personnel flying out of this airport. Oh, and it's going to take them 1 hour and 10 minutes to get there, get back. It's a real killer when it comes to what we can do to attract new companies. And also, frankly, for companies to stay here.
There was an article in the paper this morning, we reported on it as well, that there's a possibility of putting a sales tax increase on the ballot to do basically repair deferred maintenance at Union Terminal and Music Hall. Could the same thing be said? There's a lot of deferred maintenance on our transportation infrastructure that's just waiting, that I don't want to call it a time bomb, mm-hmm. but all this deferred maintenance is going to come due and it's going to be time to pay up?
Well, there are estimates that we're talking about trillions of dollars in deferred maintenance across the country. Deferred maintenance is just one nail in your backside. The other nail is the fact that our needs for new infrastructure are growing dramatically. You know, we're part of a global economy for the first time in history. You know, your business partner, your lawyer, your accountant, they could be from Hamilton County, Ohio. They could be from Hamilton, Canada, or they could be Hamilton, Australia. And what that means is that we have to build infrastructure that allows for the movement of goods to, from, and around our region. And that's true of every region around the United States. So it's not only the deferred maintenance that's killing us, but it's the fact that we need new bridges like the Brent Spence Bridge. We need new trade corridors like 75. We need new ports. And certainly we're going to need more air capacity for freight. So the needs are growing exponentially. And the funding is just not available from the federal government like it was for 50 years. That's dried up. And so we have to find alternatives.
And that federal funding source, I think isn't there a possibility or there's some talk that it's going to run out of funding in August unless Congress acts?
Jay, you're on top of it. The Highway Trust Fund goes belly up in August. And what happens there is it's kind of crazy, but when the Highway Trust Fund gets down to a $4 billion balance, they stop expending funds, which means projects basically could stop, will stop. I shouldn't say could. They will stop. We just met with our folks in Washington, and their view was that there will be a fix from Congress, and so they'll find some way of extending this. I mean, no politician wants to go home this summer knowing that they have elections in the fall and finding out that the streets, you know, that was going to be repaired, are going to be expanded for a neighborhood, can't be done. All of a sudden, nobody's working on it, and all that you have left is a bunch of torn-up streets. So there's some view that there's a lot of belief that we're going to have a temporary solution.
You talk about freight, and I think of presentations that OKI has done that I've seen mm-hmm. at City Hall. How does the Panama Canal play into that, what that could mean for our region?
Well, you're going to get a lot of different opinion on this, but I will just give you some idea of how the debate's going. 5 years ago when we started a freight study, it was common belief that the Panama Canal would, by its expansion, would dump tons and tons of goods on the eastern shores and the southern shores of the United States, and then these goods would be sent into the Midwest and East Coast. That's kind of changed, and we weren't quite sure that that was true 5 years ago. Our belief was, you know, those West Coast ports, when they're being bypassed, they're not going to sit still. Thank God this is a capitalist economy, free markets, and they're going to react. And they're going to react with better pricing. They're going to react in the true competitive spirit to try to keep goods on the West Coast. And I'll tell you now that, though it may not be a predominant belief, it's certainly up there, is the idea that it's going to have very little impact on increasing the share that goes to the East Coast and to the southern ports. But you have to remember that freight is constantly growing because we are in that global economy. So even though, let's say, the shares stay the same, there's still going to be a lot more freight moving to the East Coast and to the southern ports, which means that those ports need to be upgraded, just as well as the western ports are already doing that with hundreds of million dollars worth of expansion.
Just real quickly before I have to let you go, what role does OKI play in cycling, bicycling?
Well, I would say that if you took the percentage of money that we spend on bikes and pedestrian paths as what we can spend out of our discretionary funding, I probably bet it would be as high as most MPOs in the country. Not the highest, but up there. We're just funding a bike share program, helping to do that. We've been a slight advisor on that, and we want to do more advising on it, but we're ready to put our money where the seats are. And to us, biking is kind of an interesting phenomenon. It doesn't make any difference if you're the most hardcore liberal or the most hardcore conservative. Everybody likes biking, and the biking lobby is very, very strong. We see it. We can only fund biking projects that are transportation, not recreation. And we see these projects increasing in the number of projects that people are asking us to fund. So what we see biking as is a growing part of the transportation grid. It's not going to, it's not going to be 25% of the movement of people, but it's going to continue to grow, and people like it. And so we'll continue to fund it.
Our time has gone quickly. I've been talking with the Executive Director of the Ohio-Kentucky-Indiana Regional Council of Governments, Mark Polosinski, about OKI and its latest plans and projects. Thanks for being here.
My pleasure, Jay. Anytime.